And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations. The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, Einstein, was written by Joseph Mendel. In a world torn by war, twisted by lies and hate and suffering, there was a man who walked serenely all the years of his life.
I live in that solitude which is painful in youth, but delicious in the years of maturity. It is enough for me to contemplate the mystery of life, perpetuating itself through all eternity, to reflect upon the marvelous structure of the universe, to pause in wonder and stand rapt in awe.
Without bitterness, with compassion and a hint of amused understanding, he saw humanity, looked upon the stars, and went his way shaping the universe in his head.
To know that what is impenetrable to us really exists, manifesting itself as the highest wisdom and the most radiant beauty, this fills me with a humble admiration of the superior spirit who reveals himself in the slight details we are able to perceive with our frail and feeble minds. This forms my idea of God.
All the days of his life, he sought understanding. When he was old with wisdom and tired, he paused again to wonder. His name was Albert Einstein.
The most incomprehensible thing about the universe is that it is comprehensible.
Once it happened, as it often did, that a man came to him and said,
Dr. Einstein, is it possible for an ordinary person to understand your theory of relativity?
Well, with study and some effort, it is possible.
Well, perhaps you'd be good enough to explain it to me.
It is possible, I said, but not essential to happiness.
Still, I would like to understand.
You really want to know?
Well, I would like very much to hear your explanation in a few simple sentences.
I see. Well, if you will permit me, I will tell you a little story.
And Einstein told of two men who were walking in the country on a hot summer day. One turned to his companion, who was blind, and said,
I could do with a drink of milk.
Milk? Drink, I know. But what is milk?
Milk is a white liquid.
Liquid, I know. But my eyes. What is white?
The color of a swan's feathers.
Feathers, I know. But what is a swan?
A swan is a bird with a crooked neck.
Neck, I know. What is crooked?
I'll show you. Hold your arm out. There. Now, that is straight. Now, I bend your arm at the elbow, like this. That is crooked.
Ah, I see. Now I know what you mean by milk.
With eyes that cannot see as deep or as far, we may nevertheless seek to distinguish the crooked from the straight. Failing to grasp the universe, we may seek to comprehend a man's life. It is not given to all men to comprehend, nor does understanding come all at once to any man. There was a time when Einstein did not speak in quotations. A time in 1905 when he was 26 years old and worked as an examiner in the Swiss Patent Office. Congenial work under a tolerant director.
What's this, Einstein? What's this?
Oh, you are waving it about, so, Herr Director. Oh, yes, the current issue of Annalen der Physik.
Exactly, and what do I find in this Annalen der Physik? Three articles by a certain Albert Einstein. Three?
I didn't think they would print them all.
Congratulations, Einstein. Only, you mustn't think that you fooled me. That is not entirely...
I assure you, Herr Director.
How you sat scribbling at your desk, how often I had to call you twice before you heard me. We know what you were doing, don't we?
I have always done the work I was assigned.
Of course you have. I'm not complaining. Quite the contrary. I will regret your leaving.
I have no intention of leaving.
Oh, now, it does not become a contributor to Annalen der Physik, that is to say, a scientist, to work as a clerk in the patent office.
But I find the work pleasant and the pace enough for what I need.
That is beside the point. Einstein, you must become a Herr Doctor Professor in some university.
Why?
Why? Because... what a question.
Will it help me to do the work I want to do? I don't see how. All I need is a paper and a pencil. Why should I be a professor?
Now listen to me. A man who has written such brilliant articles... They are brilliant, aren't they?
You have read them, Herr Director.
I am no expert. I will tell you frankly, I am of two minds. Either what you have written is sheer nonsense, or else, my dear Einstein, you are a genius.
The year 1905. Three articles in one issue of a journal of physics. One on the photoelectric effect developing the quantum theory of the atom, another on the movement of molecules, and the third, the theory of relativity. In the next issue of the same journal, there was another article by Einstein, a very short one, showing that matter and energy are interrelated and stating a simple formula, E equals mc squared. There were scientists who proclaimed with a great deal of heat that Einstein wrote sheer nonsense. But there were more who saw in his views a startling new understanding of the universe, from the infinitesimal atom to the infinity of the stars. He was beginning to be noticed.
We want you at the University of Zurich, Herr Einstein.
You are very kind, Herr Professor.
Kindness has nothing to do with it. Now, you understand that no one can be appointed professor unless he has first been a Privatdozent, a lecturer.
Yes, I know. I'm giving a course of lectures now.
Indeed. Herr Einstein, I was present at the one you gave yesterday.
Were you?
Didn't you see me?
No. I must have been thinking of something else.
Obviously. It was nevertheless remarkable that you should not see me, considering that I counted no more than 5 students in attendance.
Well, my lectures are not very popular.
Einstein, your lectures are not well prepared.
I suppose not. My work is in such a state now. I have so little time.
Oh, work. It's foolish to jeopardize your future because of your duties at the patent office.
Oh, I didn't mean that, Herr Professor. But there are so many new ideas, discoveries, every hour, every minute, when I sit at my desk, when I walk, Herr Professor, even when I lecture.
That is precisely the trouble. A lecturer is not required to have new ideas or make discoveries.
I was afraid I would not make a good Privatdozent.
Believe me, I tell you this for your own good. Your whole academic career may well depend on this lecturing that you treat so lightly.
It's too bad.
Einstein, you're a man of unusual talent. It should not be difficult for you to understand that this is how one goes about becoming a professor.
I do understand.
I'm happy to hear it.
Only you must realize that I do not insist on being a professor.
Nevertheless, they insisted, and he became a professor at Zurich, then at Prague, and finally in Berlin, but in his own way, with a casual air toward things the world considered important. Einstein's words reached only a few at first, and then none at all. His quiet voice was lost in the eruption of the First World War, when the shouts of battle were matched by the cries of horror and indignation at Germany's invasion of neutral Belgium, at the new concept of treaties as scraps of paper. Was this the same Germany, Western Europe asked, that produced Goethe and Bach and Beethoven?
It is the same. You will not succeed in dividing us on the home front.
Solitary and aloof, Einstein continued his work in Berlin. But the world's anger followed him into his study.
You have an obligation to take a stand, Professor Einstein.
My dear doctor, I am always on the side of the angels.
Then you will sign our manifesto.
Well, the difficulty is to know where they stand.
I am not here to hold an amusing conversation with you. And Professor Einstein, 92 of your colleagues, intellectuals, leaders in the arts and in science, have issued a statement to the world saying there is only one Germany. German culture and German militarism are identical. You will sign right here.
How many did you say?
With you, 93.
I am afraid you will have to be content with 92.
Germany's fighting for her existence. You have a patriotic duty to join in our manifesto.
Patriotism is a matter of definition, Herr Doctor. If you will excuse me, I'm rather busy. Herr Doctor, I
Your
said...
Your position does not surprise me in the least, Professor Einstein.
Why should it? I have made no secret of my opinion.
It is what one would expect of your kind.
Oh, that's a curious expression. My kind? You mean intellectual science?
You know what I mean.
Or perhaps you are referring to the fact that I'm a pacifist.
That too does not surprise me.
Even when I was a child, Herr Doctor, I had a great dislike for playing soldier. My colleagues, as you call them, find no distinction between their culture and militarism.
Not your colleagues any longer.
I will tell you what I think of militarism.
And I do not care to hear.
Nevertheless, you will listen. The man who enjoys marching in line to the sound of drums falls below my contempt. He received his brain by mistake. The spinal cord would have been amply sufficient. This heroism at command, this senseless violence, this bombast of patriotism. Oh, how I despise them.
You make your philosophy very clear.
My pacifism is an instinct feeling. A feeling that the murder of men is horrible and evil. You see, it's not a philosophy at all.
At such a time, to talk as you do comes close to treason. I've heard enough of your Talmudic subtleties.
Ah, yes. Finally. Herr Doctor, before the war, you called me a German and the rest of the world called me a Jewish scientist. Now, I am a German to them and to you, a Jew. No doubt it will turn around again. My dear Herr Doctor, what people call me, what people think of me, does not disturb me in the least. What is the essence of Jewishness? I see it in two things. The democratic ideal of social justice and tolerance among all men, and a high regard for every form of intellectual aspiration and spiritual effort.
Love of freedom and search for truth. Were they not the essence of his life? The end of the war coincided with an experiment during an eclipse of the sun that verified predictions Einstein had made in his theory of relativity. Suddenly he was famous, not only among scientists, but among ordinary people all over the world. He was invited to visit many countries, and he traveled as a peaceful ambassador of the new German Republic and was received everywhere.
Welcome to America, Professor Einstein.
Professor Einstein, what are your views in the League of Nations?
What do you think of American women, Professor?
gentlemen, one at a time, please. Well,
is it true, Professor, that only 12 people in the world understand the theory of relativity?
I have never made such a statement.
No, but it's true.
Even to ask the question is not very complimentary to the physicists of your country or of the whole world.
Oh, I see what you mean. Professor, all those people on the dock, hundreds of them, are waiting to greet you. Can you explain such an enthusiastic reception?
Well, in New York, I am told, there is a new style every year. Perhaps this year the fashion is relativity.
I know you're a modest man, Professor Einstein, but Would you care to describe your feelings at this reception?
I am naturally pleased that so many people wish me well. My modesty, however, is not tried.
No?
You see, I have only to remember that a victorious boxer or tennis player is received with still greater enthusiasm. Of what is significant in one's own existence, one is hardly aware. And it certainly shouldn't bother the other fellow. What does a fish know about the water in which he swims all his life? The bitter and the sweet come from outside. The heart from within. From one's own efforts. For the most part, I do the thing which my own nature drives me to do. Well, it's embarrassing to earn so much respect and love for it. Arrows of hate have been shot at me, too.
Einstein is a fraud, and his theory is a mass of contradictions.
But they never hit me. The hate never touched
me. He is exposed as a disgrace to science and to the German nation. He does not dare to answer the charge.
Of what use is it to answer as if these were arguments about science? The fact is that I am a Jew and a pacifist and a Zionist. That is what you don't like.
That was what many people did not like. It did not keep the Nobel Prize from him, but it was not awarded until 1922, many years after his work was established. And the prize committee found a careful and ingenious device for keeping out of controversy.
The prize is awarded to Einstein for the photoelectric law and his work in the field of theoretical physics.
Not for relativity theory, but for his discoveries in the quantum theory of the atom. And at once, the arrows of hate flew again.
It is disgraceful that the Nobel Committee should attempt to bolster Einstein's dwindling reputation by lending its prestige to a man of his type.
The essential in the being of a man of my type lies precisely in what he thinks and how he thinks. Not in what he does or suffers.
You are not thinking of leaving Germany, Professor Einstein.
Well, would it be so amazing a decision?
Well, those people, they do not speak for all Germans.
I know.
You're respected. You have friends here, place to work.
Yes. My situation is like that of a man who is lying in a beautiful, soft bed, where he's being bitten by bedbugs.
That is a small price to pay.
Oh, I'm not complaining. Only my friend. The bugs get stronger. In 10 years... they may be full grown.
Einstein was wrong by a year or two. It was not until January 1933 that President Hindenburg appointed Adolf Hitler as the new Chancellor of the German Reich. The long night was beginning. Einstein was in Belgium a little later that year when a delegation of young people came to him, representatives of the pacifist youth movement.
Dr. Einstein, people say that we are wrong.
Is that the trouble, what people say?
Military preparedness is growing in Belgium. Some of us will soon be called up for service. Dr. Einstein, we need you to help us stand firm as pacifists.
Oh, you know what you want me to say. Well, then you don't need me at all.
I don't understand.
You are not asking my opinion. You want me to confirm what you already believe.
Is it not what you also believe?
Now you are asking. And I will tell you. In this year, in these circumstances, a person should fight in any way he can for the freedom of his country. I've shocked you, huh?
I remember your words in the statement of the War Resisters International. I appeal to all men and women, you said, whether they be eminent or humble, to declare that they will refuse to give any further assistance to war or the preparation of war. Your own words, Dr. Einstein, in 1931, only 2 years ago.
Yes, I remember them. Since then, Hitler and the Nazis are in power.
What if they are? Does that make war any the less horrible?
If Hitler wins the conflict that is inevitable, the peace of slavery will be more horrible than war.
But pacifism is bigger than one case, one set of circumstances. It is a broad universal principle.
My young friend, the world is not pure. Sometimes principles conflict with facts.
How is a person to live if not by principles?
Do you have time? Then let me talk about myself for a little minute. I have always opposed nationalism of any kind.
Doctor, we are not talking...
I know. Please be patient. I have been against nationalism, yet I am a Zionist. I favor the establishment of a Jewish state. A new nationalism, perhaps. Why? Because I look at the lives of Jews in Europe. And the facts tell me that only in such a new state can Jews live in a way that will permit self-expression and self-respect.
Dr. Einstein, you... Well, excuse me for saying it, but you are inconsistent.
Well, that's an old complaint about me.
And principles are of no importance.
I have not said that. What I am saying is... To hold a principle that has a beautiful sound, but leads to consequences that are bad, there lies the great danger.
It was a time of danger for the whole world. For Einstein, Germany was no longer a place where he could live and work. In the same year, in 1933... there was organized in Princeton, New Jersey, the Institute for Advanced Study.
You will have no teaching duties, Dr. Einstein, aside from occasional seminars. You will work as you please.
It is good of you to invite me.
Any university would be honored. You will come.
Well, there is one thing.
Yes?
I have been told that I must be practical. The salary must be... that is, I will need no less than $3,000 on which to live.
$3,000?
Oh, that seems exorbitant. Please don't hesitate to tell me.
Dr. Einstein, perhaps you will allow me to arrange the financial details with your wife.
Yes, that would be the best.
You see, Dr. Einstein, the salary we had in mind was several times $3,000.
From 1933 on, Einstein worked at the Institute and lived in Princeton. He became a citizen of the United States. He made new friends, many new friends. Yet, he was alone.
I have never belonged wholeheartedly to country or state, to my circles of friends, or even to my own family. Such isolation is sometimes bitter, but I do not regret being cut off from the understanding and sympathy of other men.
When he walked in the streets of Princeton, people stopped to greet him.
Good morning, Dr. Einstein.
Softly, as if what was important was not his answer, but the moment's contact with him. And if awe and reverence were in their voices, who will say there were not also sympathy and love?
I lose something by this isolation in which I live. But I'm also rendered independent of the customs and prejudices of others. And am not tempted to rest my peace of mind on such shiftless foundations.
He walked with peace of mind, his long white hair blowing, wearing a sweater and slacks that needed pressing. And people grew accustomed to seeing him in the streets, but never to the presence of greatness. They grew accustomed to hearing the violin from his house in Mercer Street as he played Bach or a Mozart sonata to refresh himself before returning to work. In the summer of 1945, he took a vacation from work at Saranac Lake in New York. On August 6th, toward the evening, he returned from a day on the lake to find a visitor.
You don't know me, Dr. Einstein. I have a place about a mile down the road.
Oh, then we are practically neighbors, huh?
I hope you don't mind my intruding like this.
Oh, excuse me. You have a match?
Match? Oh, yes, of course.
Thank you. My pipe is out. It's a strange thing. With all the wonders we perform nowadays, no one has succeeded in making a pipe that will stay lit.
Dr. Einstein, have you seen the newspaper?
I am on vacation, young man.
Then I'll leave you mine.
You are very mysterious. What is it?
It has to do with your work.
Ah, if I read all the foolishness that is written about me, but I have published no new work recently.
This is old. 40 years old. E equals MC squared.
So they have done it. They have taken a mathematical formula and made it...
Yes. The first atomic bomb was exploded today.
The world is not ready.
It may be that the world will never be ready. For Einstein stood alone and apart, being able to look upon himself and other men and smile a little, and then turn to the stars, seeking to understand. And if others only dimly see what he knew, it may be because understanding flows from a faith that comes before.
God is subtle, but he's not malicious.
In a world torn by war, twisted by lies and hate and suffering, Albert Einstein walked serenely all the days of his life. In April 1955, the age of 76, he closed his eyes and died in his sleep.
The most incomprehensible thing about the world is that it is comprehensible.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. Our Eternal Light drama today, Einstein, was written by Joseph Mendel. Cantor Robert Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were Roger DeCoven, Louis Van Ruten, Leon Janney, Jay Barney, Sam Gray, Peter Capel. Einstein was played by Theo Goetz. Your narrator was Norman Rose. This is Mel Brandt. The music was written by Morris Momorsky and conducted by Roy Shield. This has been an NBC Radio Network production directed by Daniel Sutter. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.